Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, December 9th, 2010. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, Megalode hearing officer says decision likely by Christmas as contested case hearing wraps up in Boise. LCSC presidential finalists announced. Washington legislature to convene special session Saturday. And UI bookstore begins renting out texts. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Hearing officer Merlin Clark said he would most likely rule before Christmas on the ConocoPhillips Megalode case as he closed a two-day hearing on the matter this afternoon in Boise. Clark added that he would announce an expedited ruling on the four megalodes as soon as he can and asked attorneys on all sides to get him briefs on several issues before noon next Wednesday. The company wants to move four loads consisting of two giant coke drums split in half and weighing up to 675,000 pounds each over Highway 12 from the Port of Lewiston over Lolo Pass and to the ConocoPhillips refinery in Billings. The loads are seen as a precursor to the more than 200 ExxonMobil megaloads the company wants to transport along Highway 12 to Montana and then to the Alberta tar sands fields. Early this morning, testimony started with Idaho Transportation Region 2 maintenance manager, engineer Doral Hoff, admitting that at some of the narrower turnoffs, the megaloads would extend out into the highway, even while they are technically pulled over. Megalode plaintiff attorney Natalie Havlina, representing 13 interveners who live along Highway 12, asked, "So the public would have one lane to get around the transport?" And Hoff replied, "Maybe a little less." Idaho Governor C.L. Butch Otter and members of the state's congressional delegation wrote letters in support of the megalodes in early 2009, and Otter voted as a member of the Board of Examiners early last year to approve overtime for state troopers accompanying the loads. The spokesman reviews Eye on Boise blog reports that one of the interveners, tourism business owner Linwood Lawhey of Kuski, testified today that his first clue that the megalodes were coming was when the power went out at his home along Highway 12 in April of this year. Lawhey found utility workers down the road who said they were raising power lines because some big loads would be coming through. Lawhey and his wife, Borg Hendrickson, who is also an intervener in the case, then found a federal grant application in which the director of the Port of Lewiston wrote that if one oil company was successful in bringing the megaloads through the Highway 12 route, then many more loads would follow. Later, Lawhey was asked to respond to a statement made yesterday by ITD Motor Vehicles Administrator Alan Frew that the agency will barricade turnouts for the 24 hours before each load moves through because he had heard that nuts plan to park their vehicles in the turnouts as a way of blocking the loads. Lawhey said, "I will, of course, not be able to pull over if I had any difficulty with a vehicle. I would not be able to pull over to enjoy the scenery. I would not be able to pull over in some sites that are my favorite fishing holes. These turnouts are used a lot by various people for various purposes. First of all, the commercial truckers to take a break, and once kayaking season starts, the kayakers and the rafters fill those turnouts, and then the tourists just follow them. If those turnouts are barricaded, it'd have a huge effect." After Megalode's opponents rested their case at noon today, ConocoPhillips attorney Eric Stidham asked hearing officer Clark for a directed verdict because the interveners had failed to make their case. Clark denied the motion. Terry Emmert, the founder of Emmert Transportation, which is moving the ConocoPhillips loads, testified this afternoon that the company moves up to 1,000 extra large loads per year, including whole buildings, and has never lost a customer's load. Emirates project manager Mark Albrecht testified that it was almost impossible for a load to tumble off the truck and into the Laksaw or Clearwater rivers. Albrecht said, if that ever happened, the load would be worthless to ConocoPhillips because it would no longer be perfectly round. In that case, he said, it would be cut up into 30,000-pound pieces and picked up by a regular-sized crane and loaded onto regular-sized semi-trucks for removal. In an earlier story, Idaho Department of Transportation District 2 Maintenance Manager Doral Hoff admitted under cross-examination yesterday that it would take a month or two to remove a megaload from the Laksaw or Clearwater River should one fall over the bank during the transport up U.S. Highway 12. Hoff was testifying at the ITD's contested case hearing on the ConocoPhillips megaloads case. According to the spokesman review's Eye on Boise blog, Hoff said, we don't know how long it might be. It could take up to a month or 2 months. I don't have any idea, but during that time, the traveling public would not be inconvenienced. Attorney Natalie Havlina, who represents the three plaintiffs and 10 other interveners in the megaloads case, noted during that time there would be an object the size of a small building in the river and asked if traffic would be blocked while a giant crane was positioned to retrieve the megaload. Hoff replied that one methodology would be to cut the drum up. It would be a reduced load of no value to ConocoPhillips, he said. Meeting in Boise today, the State Board of Education voted 7-1 to allow Idaho's colleges and universities to request fee increases higher than 10% for full-time students next year. Trustees said the one-year waiver of the rule keeping requests under 10% does not mean the board will automatically approve higher fee increases next April. A Lewis Clark State College search committee has forwarded the names of five finalists for the position of president to the State Board of Education. The five finalists announced today are Daniel Bingham, the dean and CEO of the College of Technology at the University of Montana Helena, Stephen Condon, the former president of Tennessee Wesleyan College, Anthony J. Fernandez, who's currently serving as the interim president of LCSC and was provost there, Provost and Executive Vice President of Sierra Nevada College, Lynn Gillette, and former President of West Virginia School of Osteopathic Medicine, Richard Rafes. In an effort to help students reduce education expenses, the University of Idaho Bookstore has begun offering textbook rentals. With more than 300 titles for rent this semester, the University of Idaho Bookstore joins about 1,500 college bookstores nationwide with textbook rental programs that can typically save students 30-50% off the price of purchasing a used textbook. UI bookstore manager John Bales said he suspects it will be, quote, a fast-growing part of our business. While students are currently able to rent textbooks from a variety of online textbook rental companies, Bales said the bookstore wants to provide students with as many options as possible, and if they are successful, quote, money stays in the university and in town. The Lewiston Tribune reports Washington State University is preparing for deep budget cuts. At yesterday's budget meeting, WSU President Elson Floyd and Provost Warwick Bailey discussed how the university plans to deal with $25 million in budget cuts this year. The cut includes $13.5 million in permanent cuts and $11.2 million in temporary cuts from a holdback declared last month by Governor Chris Gregoire. Floyd and Bailey warned that next year promises to be much worse. President Floyd said, we will have to look at everything we do if there is a further permanent reduction in our budget. According to Provost Bailey, Washington State higher education is going to have to get used to a new normal of vastly reduced resources. Bailey said, our university going forward is not going to look the same as the one we've become familiar with. He said, with the new normal, He said the new normal could include a reduction in the number of colleges at WSU or a major reorganization that focuses on the university's strengths. The budget plan does not eliminate any programs at this point and does not cut any tenured faculty members. However, 32 filled positions could be lost, including staff and adjunct faculty members. The plan relies on vacant positions not being filled, and Floyd said that cannibalizing vacant positions was necessary to avoid further layoffs. Furloughs are still on the table to be used to deal with next year's budget. The Washington legislature will meet in a special session Saturday to deal with the state's $1 billion budget deficit. Legislative leaders say they have an agreement to deal with $784 million of that deficit, including recognizing Governor Gregoire's $200 million holdback. Leaders say they have also agreed to another $584 million in cuts on top of that. Former Idaho gubernatorial candidate Rex Rammel, who lost the Republican primary to C.L. Butch Otter this past spring, has announced he plans to move to Idaho County and work to eradicate wolves. Rammel is pushing Idaho County commissioners to pass an emergency ordinance allowing the county sheriff the authority to kill wolves. Declaration of the county emergency ordinance would be an attempt to remove wolf populations from federal control. If commissioners go along with the idea, Rammel says he is eager to help. Rammel, however, faces legal problems as he was officially charged yesterday with possession of an illegally taken elk. He allegedly used an expired elk tag from the wrong hunting zone when killing the elk, which is a misdemeanor. Five inmates at a privately run prison in southern Idaho became sick with E. coli at the beginning of the month. The prison is run by Corrections Corporation of America. Tests indicated a toxin associated with the bacteria that can cause serious food poisoning. Sarah Correll from the Central District Health Department says no new cases have been discovered and the inmates who were sickened are recovering. Health Department officials were at the prison yesterday to test food and water. In August, inspections found coliform bacteria in the facility's water supply, forcing staff to boil water. Idaho lawmaker Representative Phil Hart of Athol lost his bid to appeal a state tax commission order that he pay $53,000 in back taxes, penalties, and interest. First District Court Judge John Mitchell wrote yesterday that Hart's claim, quote, lacks any coherent legal argument. The Idaho State Tax Commission rejected Hart's attempts earlier this year, saying he had missed a filing deadline. Hart argued that as a legislator, he should be exempt from the time limits during a legislative session or 10 days before one begins. Judge Mitchell agreed that the deadline was missed, even if Hart had been entitled to legislative privilege. Hart is also fighting over his federal tax bill, claiming income taxes are unconstitutional. Three interested parties in the Upper Lhoksaw Land Exchange came together yesterday at a Moscow League of Women Voters Wednesday noontime program. Although originally a plan to trade up to 28,000 acres of Palouse Ranger District land for 40,000 acres of logged over checkerboard land owned by Western Pacific Timber along the Bitterroot Crest near the Montana state line, current options proposed by the Forest Service range between 6,200 and 20,400 acres of mostly Palouse Ranger District land going to Western Pacific. Forest Service Project Manager Teresa Trulock said the agency's goal going into the exchange is to begin restoration of the Upper Lhoksaw acreage along the Bitterroot Divide.
Our primary species of interest up there are two threatened and endangered fish species, and this is considered in a lynx habitat, so a lot of other things going on up here. There's the Nez Perce Trail, the Lewis and Clark Trail runs through checkerboard country too, so those are all things that interested us in consolidation.
The preferred alternative spelled out in the Forest Service Environmental Impact Statement released November 22nd would trade 6,200 500 acres of small, isolated Forest Service parcels spread over three national forests, and then use $2 million from the Federal Land and Water Conservation Fund to purchase more acreage along the Bitterroot Divide, although that money has not yet been budgeted by Congress. Under that alternative, the Forest Service would spend 3 years trying to raise additional funds to purchase the Upper Lhoksaw acreage, but if that failed, the agency would then trade away 14,200 acres of land, mostly on the Palouse Ranger District of the Clearwater Forest, but also including Nez Perce National Forest and Panhandle National Forest acres. Trudlock related the reasoning behind choosing which Forest Service land to eliminate from the original 28,000 acres proposed for the exchange.
And we looked at all of our original public scoping comments and looked at the areas of real concern, and like out in Elk City, we dropped lands that were in the American River drainage area. And there was a lot of concern over those lands leaving federal ownership for the same reasons we were trying to get these into federal ownership, the same two threatened and endangered fish species. So those lands are no longer being considered. We had some parcels that by the Potlatch River ran through. Those parcels were dropped out. And other bits and pieces, a lot around Elk River. The community of Elk River was very concerned about the amount of federal lands that could potentially leave ownership because they see their new niche as trying to entice people to come into Elk River to recreate on all those public lands surrounding Elk River.
That was Upper Lhoksaw Land Exchange Program Manager Teresa Trulock with the Forest Service. Marla Beaker of Western Pacific Timber, of which Tim Blexeth is a minority owner, said her company's private lands are primarily her company is primarily involved in pursuing land exchanges.
We do allow recreation on our properties. Our Goldendale block, we participate in Fish and Wildlife's Feel Free to Hunt program, which is a cooperative agreement that secures public access.
Baker pointed to completed exchanges with the Washington State Department of Natural Resources as examples. As for the Upper Lhoksaw Exchange in Idaho, Baker said Forest Service areas of concern, such as the Potlatch River parcels and the American River parcels, were taken out during the scoping process.
And these parcels were identified by the Forest Service for the exchange. We didn't take a map and go, we want that one, that one, that one, that one. These were identified by the Forest Service. And part of their criteria were that they were difficult to manage. Some of these parcels lack legal access. Actually, 40% of the Clearwater County parcels don't have legal access to them.
Marla Beaker of Western Pacific Timber. Gary McFarlane of the Moscow-based environmental group Friends of the Clearwater expressed concern over contiguous parcels of habitat being traded away. McFarlane also said there was no appraisal of the lands done as part of the environmental impact statement.
So we as a public don't get a chance to look at that when we're making our comments. In the interest of full disclosure, you know, for open government, I think the draft environmental impact statement should have had talked in a detailed way about appraisal methodology, assumptions used in the land valuation, the identity of the contract appraisers, qualifications, et cetera, et cetera. And the Forest Service needs to make sure, though, that those appraisals are available to the public. That's one of the problems. Why do I harp on this? The National Environmental Policy Act says this. An analysis needs to be made, and here's the key word, before decisions are made. All right, there's an MOU from between Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Western Pacific and Timber and others, in 2008 said the purpose of this was to conduct an exchange. It seems like the decision, for all practical purposes, was made before they even came out with this draft environmental impact statement. That's actually a violation of law.
Gary McFarland of Friends of the Clearwater at yesterday's League of Women Voters Forum on the Upper Lockshaw Land Exchange proposal. McFarland and other opponents of the exchange would rather the Forest Service purchase the Upper Lockshaw checkerboard land, but that doesn't seem to be a likely prospect under the environmental impact statement options because federal money for such purchases is scarce. The recording of yesterday's meeting was made available to KRFP by Tom Hansen of MoscowCares.com. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. The weather, 100% chance of rain, low 35 tonight. East winds 10 to 15, gusts up to 25. Tomorrow, 50% chance of rain showers. Snow level 2,800 feet, rising to 3,500 feet. Mostly cloudy, high 38, southwest winds 5 to 15, gusts up to 25. Less than half an inch of snow possible Friday night. 30% chance of snow showers, mainly before 4 a.m. Mostly cloudy, low 31. 1 to 2 inches of snow possible Saturday. 30% chance of snow, mainly after 10 a.m. High 36. Currently 39 degrees and overcast in Moscow. Coming up next is Talk Nation Radio, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio at 6:30. Music with Alan Solon at 7:30. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow.